Hey, everybody. How do you lose the Georgia runoff in 24 seconds? Well, we dive into that and so much more on how establishment Republicans are not handling the Georgia runoffs correctly. And we want them to win, but they have got to change their tone. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Please consider supporting us, charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. How do you lose the Georgia runoffs in 24 seconds or less? Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
I want to tell you guys about Angel Tree. We've talked about this before on the Charlie Kirk Show. If you want to give back this Christmas season, I highly encourage you go to charliekirk.com, scroll down a little bit, and there's an Angel Tree banner. If you check it out, Angel Tree does amazing work. It is a prison fellowship that helps young children who have parents in prison. It gives them an opportunity to hear from their parents. It gives them a Bible this Christmas season. It's a phenomenal fellowship. If you go to charliekirk.com and you scroll down, click on that Angel Tree banner, we have actually exceeded our goal. We wanted to serve 1,477 children, and we have actually done 2,138. You guys did that. So let's try and keep going. If you guys go above that, that will be amazing. If you go to charliekirk.com and click on the Angel Tree banner. Joe Biden gave a speech, but what I thought was super interesting, I meant to mention this with Martha, but when you're on live TV, you get so many different thoughts and you just have to do your best to package it. And I was more responding to Geraldo than anything else. And it was a good conversation. I mean that, but was super interesting. But Joe Biden, as he was leaving the stage, he ignored a reporter's question that was screaming at him saying, "What do you have to say about your son who's under federal investigation?" Just very interesting. Joe Biden went through a speech trying to rub in the face the fact that the Electoral College certified him as the winner. And what I found to be very interesting is Joe Biden was continually saying, "It's time to move on. It's time to move on." Now, many Republicans are also saying this. This was a fundamental part of Mitch McConnell's kind of speech. It's time to turn the page. What a lot of these people don't understand, because they live in an atmosphere of just people that agree completely with their technocratic corporatist worldview, is that most of the country actually does not want that to happen. Most of the country actually wants to see intense, thorough investigations into precisely what happened in this election. And this kind of insistence from the ruling class to turn the page at all costs makes us question the motives and only makes us want to see Donald Trump in there even more. And this is kind of it's a failure to recognize exactly why Republicans won Senate races in Iowa, Montana, and North Carolina. If Mitch McConnell thinks that Joni Ernst won in Iowa because of Joni Ernst, you're a fool. Do you actually think that Tom Tillis won because he's Tom Tillis? They won because Donald Trump had the highest turnout for a Republican ever and expanded the Republican base beyond anything that anyone could have ever possibly imagined. And some people are actually taking a stand. I want to go to Congressman Mo Brooks, Cut 31, talking about how he's going to fight and object. Go to Cut 31, then I want to play Cut 32 right after. Play Cut 31.
I'm quite confident that if we only counted lawful votes cast by eligible American citizens, Donald Trump won the Electoral College. So I have a choice. I can either sit back and surrender and be a part of the surrender caucus, or I can fight for our country. And that's what I'm going to do.
We expect our leaders to fight. That's why we knock on doors for them. That's why we support them. That's why what we do at Turning Point Action is in support of them. Go to Cut 32, Mo Brooks saying he's going to object to the Electoral College votes. I'm going to tell you the significance of this. Cut 32.
So on January the 6th, I'm going to object to the submissions of Electoral College votes from various states that, in my judgment, have such flawed election systems that their vote counts are unworthy of our ratification in the United States Congress. What I need is a United States senator who will join me. If we have a House member and a senator, then by golly, that forces a House vote and a floor vote on whether to accept this systematically flawed election system or to reject it. I want to reject it so that we can have an honest and fair and accurate election.
So as soon as Congressman Mo Brooks objects, then it goes to House debate. However, he does need a senator to join him so they can force a House vote. Just one U.S. senator. My guess is that Josh Hawley or Rand Paul or some member of the United States Senate is going to join Congressman Mo Brooks in that. And that is the next frontier, and that is the next fight. You want to win the runoffs in Georgia? You want to win an election where all of a sudden people are a little groggy after the New Year's? Get them excited that you're going to fight. Get them excited that all of a sudden that the Trump movement is not going away, that we're not going to go back to the warmongering, open borders, pro-corporate, pharmaceutical pandering Republican Party where we congratulate the other side. Do you congratulate somebody after they rob a bank? Of course not. Getting in shape doesn't have to be about losing a specific amount of weight. All of you that are going into Christmas season, I know it's easy to put on a couple extra pounds, just a little less activity than usual. I get it. Also, commit yourself to lose weight. And that's what Noom is all about. But it's more than just losing weight. It is a lifestyle changer. They take a physical, psychological, and social approach. You can integrate Noom into your life because you trust yourself to make good choices. The psychological part of it is the ability to make healthy choices more easily, understand your thought patterns better, a stronger sense of self-worth. Noom is the habit-changing solution that helps users learn to develop a new relationship with food through personalized courses. Based in psychology, Noom teaches you why you do the things you do and empowers you with the tools you need to break bad habits and replace them with better ones. If you go off track, that's okay. You're human. It's understandable. But Noom is able to really be able to encourage you and give you the data that you need, because it's based in psychology. Chat with a goal specialist and Noom community to get and give help to people going through the same things. You don't have to change it all in one day. Small steps make big progress. Sign up today at Noom.com, Noom.com/Charlie. That's Noom.com/Charlie. I was on Fox News with Martha McCallum, with Geraldo Rivera. This was after Joe Biden's speech. So let's just kind of frame this first. For those of you that missed Joe Biden's speech, this is basically the best montage I could give you. Let's play cut 24.
And once again, in America, the rule of law, more Americans voted this year than have ever voted in the history of the United States of votes counted than Pence received when they won in 2016. Excuse me. Or dispute the results margin 4 years ago. And yet, I thank them, and I'm convinced we can work together for the good of the nation on many subjects.
What's the over-under on how long he actually will serve as president if he gets sworn in? I'd like to actually see that. I mean, that's what we're supposed to believe that 80 million people voted for. They were so fired up that they voted for that more than Barack Obama filling acres of support in Dane County, Chicago, Denver. You remember the Denver convention in 2008? It was electric. It's one of the most amazing political, I mean, I'm not an Obama supporter, of course, but Obama had real support, not artificial astroturf like this. So that was the speech. And so I was on with Geraldo last evening. I have a lot of respect for Geraldo. I've always really enjoyed him. I always think he's very interesting. I think he's generally very fair. This is what Geraldo said to me, cut 35.
and you suppress that conversation, that is not healthy for our country, Geraldo.
All right, so that raises a question.
For six weeks.
Geraldo.
We have litigated this for 6 weeks. Twice the Supreme Court of the United States have rejected it. 9-0, including all three Trump associate justices.
But Geraldo, I think the question is, Geraldo.
Basically, it's Geraldo saying that it's time to move on. You have to stop this. And so one of the arguments that Geraldo was making was that it's long past time to move on because of all these lawsuits. Now, mind you, we've had such a compressed period of time, and we knew all along that the courts are very difficult. They're difficult mechanisms to be able to have emergency relief, especially with elections. Once a Secretary of State says something, it's very difficult to overthrow that. However, to use Geraldo's own logic against him, what did we Republicans do back in 2017 when Democrats were saying they were worried that our election was tampered with? What did we Republicans do when Democrats were saying that Russia significantly influenced our election? What did we do? What we did as Republicans is we said we're worried that half the country may never trust our elections again. We as Republicans had the very same argument that we have today. We just handled it way too generously, in my opinion. What we did, because of a fake narrative that was launched by a phony dossier, after the firing of James Comey, a Republican Congress, Paul Ryan, authorized Bob Mueller unconstitutionally, illegally, to be a roaming special prosecutor. It was never, ever about Russia. They had just enough nonsense in the narrative. Now, why did Republicans agree to this? Some corporate Republicans like Paul Ryan for bad reasons, but some grassroots Republicans, and Ron DeSantis voted against it, who's terrific, but others fought back against it. But why? They fought back against it. They supported it, I should say, because they were worried that if we did not get to the bottom of what possibly could be foreign interference in the election, then 60 million people might lose trust in the process. Where are those Democrats now? We satisfied the Democrats' demands in 2017 and all of 2018. Giving Bob Mueller and his dozen angry Democrats and Andrew Weissman full and total authority to go through a metaphorical legal colonoscopy of every person who is ever in the proximity of President Donald Trump. Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, Michael Flynn. Lives were completely and totally ruined, shattered, never again made whole. Did we actually find the aforementioned Russian collusion? No. What we found is a seventh grade style troll farm of people that were, I think, in the country Macedonia and Russia running what I think they called the Internet Research Agency, if I remember correctly, the IRA. It was so pathetic that it was a collection of a couple dozen memes that they ran, and we're supposed to believe that this was the big reason why Donald Trump won in 2016. No communications with Russia, no meetings with Russia, no collusion with Russia, none of it. Instead, it turned out that the Democrats were the ones that were colluding with Russia. Now, what does this have to do with what we're dealing with now, what Geraldo talked about? The reason we tolerated it is that well-meaning Republicans were like, well, if there is something to this, then I want to know. If there is something to this, we want to make sure that we get to the bottom of it. And what ended up happening was the greatest gift to the Democrats that we could have ever possibly have imagined. We're playing badminton, and they're playing military warfare. They're coming in with tanks, with drone reconnaissance, and we're playing tennis in our backyard. And so the question needs to be asked, and I would have asked Geraldo, I would have made this argument, but we kind of went in a different direction. And the argument I made, I'll make again, and I think it's the winning argument, which is that if you do not satisfy the questions of 74 million people, they're never going to trust another election again. And all of a sudden, this talk about creating new countries and kind of separating yourself is not something I support, but it becomes inevitable. Don't be surprised when people like Alan West and Rush Limbaugh start to talk like this. Let's play cuts 37 of Alan West starting to talk about this and a fracture in our constitutional republic. I want to be very clear for Media Matters. I do not support secession, okay? What I'm talking about is an analysis of what ends up becoming inevitable when you shut up 74 million people. Play cut 37.
And the fact that the Supreme Court would not hear this case, which is the original jurisdiction for states who petition to redress their grievances against another state, that's a fracture in the foundation of our constitutional republic. Well, first of all, I would like to see the Supreme Court take up this case, because if the Supreme Court would not hear another state petition a grievance against another state, then where do those states go? I think it's very important that law-abiding states who want to follow the law, are coming together with their attorneys generals, coming together with their state legislators.
If you continually suppress, stifle, and try to ignore bubbling up frustration, that frustration does not go away. It will only manifest itself in different ways. It might manifest itself into a different political movement, a fracturing, or it could go in a way that none of us want to see. And he's the Texas GOP chair. So Geraldo's argument is, he said, for the good of the country, we must move on. I say the opposite. I say for the good of the country, we must not move on. Because when you start, if you talk to somebody that has come from Venezuela in the last couple of years, they laugh at their elections and they laugh at their leaders and they laugh at what their leaders do because they say none of it matters. The military will come in and just crown the reigning Communist Party elected. None of that is healthy for our republic. For the goodness of our country, we must lean in on this election fight and double down. Looking for some entertainment that will lift you up and leave you inspired? I want to encourage you to go to salemnow.com and watch Poor to CEO, The Incredible Journey of Herman Cain. Herman was beloved by all, and his rise from humble beginnings to CEO of Godfather's Pizza. I had the opportunity to meet him many times. He was an amazing person. Add to that a presidential run in 2012, a victorious battle over cancer, and a flourishing career in Atlanta radio. Herman was an amazing man whose life embodied the values we strive to live and pass along to our kids and grandkids. Belief in God, the power of personal responsibility, hard work, a good education, living each day with a thankful heart. Poor to CEO is one of the most inspirational, entertaining films I've ever watched, and you can watch it right now at salemnow.com. That's salemnow.com. Use the promo code KIRK and save 20%. Watch Poor to CEO, The Herman Cain Story at salemnow.com. There's an article in USA Today, Madeleine Albright, who may be one of my least favorite people that served in government in the last couple decades, says that, and Michael Chertoff, who single-handedly eroded more civil liberties than any other person in government in the last 20 years. He ran George W. Bush's Department of Homeland Security. You can thank him for the incompetence of the TSA. Thank you, Michael Chertoff. Trump's behavior is a threat to America's democracy. This, again, I could write this stuff for them. It comes from a boilerplate college intern at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. They just say, hey, can you go write the usual platitudes, how long our country has been around and all these sorts of things. And so it says here, and says, over the years, American citizens have grown to expect certain things of their political leaders, among them respect of the free press, firm opposition to political violence, and a willingness to accept election results. Presidents cannot be prosecuted for violating these norms, but they endure public outrage and political consequences. President Trump's wanton attitude toward tradition is not new. Over the past years, he has called for imprisoning political opponents, wrong, dangled pardons for those willing to commit crimes. Oh, you mean like how Bill Clinton pardoned Rick Hendrick? You remember that one? Not covered at all. Demonized journalists who dare to question these actions. And it says here that Trump's claims are not based in fact. The president's behavior is causing both long-term dangers to our system and presenting more immediate challenges to the crises we face today. I understand now. So when Democrats like you, Madeleine Albright, resisted at all costs against President Trump's election in 2016, and you blamed the Kremlin, not Hillary Clinton, for not visiting Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania, particularly Wisconsin and Michigan in 2016, but you blame the Kremlin. How exactly was that unifying the country? How is that bringing us all together? So the debate that is now going to rage, and I kind of saw this a little bit between two people I really trust, Larry Schweikert and Joel Pollack, is how do Republicans now handle this? If Joe Biden is going to become president of the United States, which is not inevitable, but it is becoming more and more likely with the Electoral College and the Supreme Court tossing out election results. It is not inevitable. There are still measures that can be done, including the United States Senate standing up and refusing to certify the election results, of which they absolutely should do. The U.S. Senate should do that. However, it's very unlikely because moderate Republicans are indistinguishable at times from Democrats, especially when it comes to not wanting to be called angry names from the Washington Post and the New York Times. And so how should Republicans handle this moment now? Some people are saying that it's time for Republicans to move on. You guys ever heard the organization MoveOn.org? Well, it is a George Soros-funded activist organization. MoveOn.org literally started under the idea that we must move on post Bill Clinton's impeachment from all the, let's say, less than desirable activity that Bill Clinton engaged in, that we must move on past that. We now have MoveOn Republicans. Many of these MoveOn Republicans are engaging endlessly in trying to say we must turn the page. This is a very dangerous, foolish, and short-sighted viewpoint that somehow Democrats are going to be more than willing to accept Republicans, accept a country that is whole again, as if it's this post-World War II moment. Democrats are more focused on how on earth did 74 million people vote for this man? How do we punish them? Just look at the Trump Accountability Project. So some people are saying that what the Democrats did when they were perpetually resisting was unhealthy for the country. There's probably a good argument to that. However, it was also politically a winner. Not to saying that they necessarily legitimately won this in 2020, but look at 2018. In 2018, we did not have as many widespread allegations of voting issues as we have had here in 2020. And Democrats won convincing races in 2018. Not convincing, but they won a lot of House races across the country. So how is it that we should handle it? What is the blueprint? And also, what are the measures that we have left? The Senate. Is there anything to what's going on with these investigations into Dominion voting systems? Senator Mitt Romney, right on schedule, says Senator Romney congratulated President-elect Biden on his win and expressed admiration for his willingness to endure the rigors of a presidential campaign and serve in the nation's highest office. They also discuss the challenging environment the president-elect will confront with a divided nation, the ongoing pandemic, a struggling economy, and a rising China. The senator wished him well. Well, one thing Mitt Romney and Joe Biden have in common is selling our country out to China. I love this kind of Chinese revisionism that these private equity corporate types all of a sudden have. I encourage you guys to go to Bain.com/offices/Beijing. You'll see that Bain Capital, which Mitt Romney is a co-founder of, has a wonderfully vibrant and active office in China. Rising China? Really? Why don't you go tell your buddies at Bain Capital to go shut down the office in Beijing? Inspired by the vast potential of the Chinese nation and its people, Bain was the first foreign strategy firm to plant its roots in Beijing. Interesting, Mitt. For more than 25 years, our team has partnered with the change-oriented clients across the Chinese mainland, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. We operate as part of Bain Greater China. Along with our offices in Shanghai and Hong Kong, Bain Beijing is nestled within the city's central business district, just above the Dawang Road station of Metro Line 1, beside the sophisticated Shin Kong Place shopping mall. After that gut-wrenching, disgusting poetry on Bain's website, we're supposed to believe that Mitt Romney and all of his buddies at Bain Capital really want to confront a rising China? No, that's not the case whatsoever. Mitt Romney and all the corporate types are using the China saber rattling as a way to try and increase defense budget so they can go invade more countries in the Middle East so they can pander to the war incorporated lobby that satisfies their corporate open border interests. I am ashamed that I ever supported Mitt Romney, and I know a lot of you are exactly the same. In fact, I could make the argument that Mitt Romney not winning in 2012 helped give us Donald Trump and some reprieve from the constant bipartisan leftist tilt that our country was on. In fact, Barack Obama got no Supreme Court justices in his second term. He did get the Iran deal. He did almost nothing in his second term that Donald Trump did not undo. And Mitt Romney goes and he says, I want to congratulate him for his wonderful perseverance. It's such a phenomenal thing. Why is it that Mitt Romney talks nicer about Joe Biden, who sold our country out to China via Hunter Biden, sold our country out to Ukraine, Joe Biden, who's the chairman of the company? I really wonder if Senator Romney and Mitt Romney, if they're hiding something themselves. Mitt Romney is such a self-righteous politician. I'll be nice with the word I use after that. That he really believes he's a better person than everybody else. He really believes that he possesses a higher quality moral fiber than the rest of the country. And the Republican Party is going to have a series of questions that we must answer. What kind of party do we want to be? And this question is actually being asked right now in Georgia. Mitch McConnell failed when he went to the Senate floor and offered his congratulations to Joe Biden. You can offer recognition, but as soon as you offer congratulations, you are validating the process and you're applauding what was done. What kind of party do we actually want to be? What kind of movement are we going to be? Remember, Mitt Romney actually wanted to be a member of the Trump administration. Mitt Romney went out and asked for Donald Trump's endorsement in Utah. Asked for it, and he got it. Donald Trump was the bigger man and gave him that endorsement. What's going to happen in Georgia? People are wondering. I'm going to tell you right now, people are not going to show up and they're not going to vote if they think that there is no difference. It's indistinguishable between corporate Republicans and moderate Democrats, especially when there is a Senate floor speech that is given by the Senate Majority Leader, almost provoking a response. Now, I do want to get to this article here, but I want to go into this at length. It's going to be very dangerous to talk about this, so we'll see what happens. I'm dangerous because the Glavilt, the Soviet censors, might get rid of us at any time right now. So a company came out called Allied Universal Security, and they issued a report about Dominion voting systems, specifically in Michigan. Now, mind you, if you type in Allied Universal Security Dominion, it shows up nowhere on Google, nowhere on news. It is the most complete and total suppression that I have seen of an article in recent times. Because if you read this report done by Allied Universal Services, you'll start to realize that their report shows that there are a lot of questions around these Dominion voting systems in Michigan. The Allied Security Operations Group, which does a great job, they're hired by people all across the country to look into technical issues and security issues. They came up and they said the following. We conclude that Dominion voting systems is intentionally and purposefully designed with inherent errors to create systemic fraud and influence election results. The system intentionally generates an enormously high number of ballot errors. The electronic ballots are then transferred for adjudication. The intentional errors lead to bulk adjudication of ballots with no oversight, no transparency, and no audit trail. This leads to voter or election fraud. Now, Allied Security Operations Group, if you look them up online, they're a very reputable security company. You go to their website, they have top-tier clients. They do a really amazing job. The Allied Security Operations Group has been around for quite some time. The person who published this report has an MBA from Harvard University and a political science degree from Duke University, worked for NASA, and worked for MIT. But this is exactly why people are becoming so incredibly uneasy. Because they're reading these reports and they see their leaders intentionally decide to ignore it, make the step of defiance. There's a great poem by Langston Hughes. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat, or crust and sugar over? Like a syrupy sweet, maybe it just sags like a heavy load. Or does it explode? That's a beautiful poem by Langston Hughes. A friend, one of our producers sent it to me. Langston Hughes, an American poet, very talented, and lived kind of in the early parts of the 1900s. But that poem asking, what happens when you don't get something that you believe, a dream that you believe was going to happen, something that you think was stolen from you? Does it dry up? Does it fester? Does it stink? Or does it explode? And this is part of the warning that I have been given for quite some time. The warnings that we have been giving here on the Charlie Kirk Show. And very few people actually took this seriously. In fact, we were mocked. Is that when you have half the country that no longer wants to live with the other half of the country, half the country with nothing in common, no shared history, culture, or language, background, or direction of how to proceed, what do we have in common besides a unified currency? And then if they don't trust the leaders, they don't trust the process that we elect our leaders, what exactly are the metaphorical ties that bind us together? What keeps us all united? What used to keep us united was a belief in the American Trinity, liberty, in God we trust, e pluribus unum, as my good friend Dennis Prager talks about often. What used to keep us in common is a belief that America is the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. Our children were taught that. We stood for the pledge. We believed that America was a beautiful place, worthy of preservation, necessary to fight, critical to defend. Now we don't have that. Now half the country believes it's time for an internal revolution to overthrow anything that preexisted it, that it is time to throw away our history, which they're already doing, misrepresent it intentionally. And don't be surprised all of a sudden when people like Alan West and Rush Limbaugh start asking the question, what exactly are we doing here? What does Texas have in common with Rhode Island? What does Louisiana have in common with Connecticut outside of a unified currency? By the way, I'm not supporting any of this. I'm commenting on what is happening. I think it's unhealthy. I think it's wrong. And I don't like the direction that we're headed. You're able to have an analysis of a provocative topic without endorsing it. But you're going to see very real movements of people that want to separate into their own versions and forms of America very, very soon. People here on the Charlie Kirk Show, our team, they'll tell you, I've been warning against this for quite some time. Many liberals don't want to live in the country with conservatives, and conservatives don't want to live in the country with liberals. They can't agree on whether or not we're even a good country, our history, what language to speak, what does the culture mean. And this would be one of the greatest gifts we could give China, is a fractured America, an America where there's 10 or 15 states that kind of compartmentalize themselves into their own new America. Might be Texas and Kansas, Oklahoma, Wyoming, and the Dakotas, maybe Louisiana. And they say, now we're America, we're siphoning ourselves off. Which very well could be what we've talked about here on this program for quite some time, an inevitable national divorce. And you want that to happen quickly? You want that to happen abruptly? Do what Geraldo Rivera asked us to do. Sit down, shut up, you're an idiot, there's nothing to see here except the results. That's not a way to build trust and build unity. That's how you get a divorce. Let's play a scene from one of the all-time great movies, Airplane. Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm sorry I had to wake you. I'm just looking for a doctor. There's nothing to worry about.
Stewardess, I think the man sitting next to me is a doctor.
Sir, excuse me, sir. I'm sorry I have to wake you. You a doctor?
That's right.
We have some passengers that are very sick. Could you come take a look at them?
Yes. Yes, of course. I'll be back in a minute. You'd better tell the captain. We've got to land as soon as we can. This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now. Tell the captain I must speak to him. Captain, how soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me I'm a doctor.
No, I mean I'm just not sure.
But can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
No. I mean we can't land for another 2 hours.
So for those of you that are just saying, what did I just listen to? It is one of the all-time great movies, Airplane. And if you are on an airplane and you happen to be seated near Jill Biden, let it be very clear that there is not a doctor in the house. So there was an op-ed that was written recently in Wall Street Journal, Paul Jugeot. I think that's the right name to say it, way to say it. He's a good guy. And he published an article that basically said the following: is there a doctor in the White House? Not if you need an MD. And basically the criticism, which is a correct one, is that it was written by Joseph Epstein, but it was the publisher is Paul Jugeot, who oversees the opinion section. Basically, the idea was that Dr. Jill Biden is not a real doctor. She has a doctorate in education, but she keeps on putting doctor in front of her name. And especially in the time where everything is so overemphasized with medicine, it's very much deceiving. And so how many of our listeners here would be super interesting, when those of you guys went to college, did you call your professors doctor or did you call them professor? Or when they sign it, it's usually PhD. So using the doctor as kind of a prefix, as a title, it in a lot of different ways, it's not just misleading, but it almost insinuates that she has some formal training in medicine. And now this really wouldn't be that big of a story. It's an op-ed, but the Biden team responded so unbelievably aggressively. Michelle Obama came out and defended her. I mean, the lady doth protest too much. I mean, the amount of backlash that was received around this very simple and thoughtful op-ed was extraordinary. It was an overwhelming avalanche from the Biden team. I mean, it was a counterpunch that kind of goes to show that the aggressive media response is how the next 4 years, if Biden gets in, they're basically saying the Biden family is off limits. Remember, Barron was not off limits. Ivanka's son was not off limits when whether or not he built a Lego castle. Remember, more media attention went towards Ivanka's four-year-old son than Joe Biden's adult son for selling us out to China. There was more media attention put forward on whether or not Ivanka Trump's son built a Lego castle than whether or not Hunter Biden actually sold us out to the Ukrainians, the Chinese, and sat on foreign boards. Melania was never off limits. Don Jr. is certainly not off limits. Eric was never off limits. Tiffany was never off limits. But that's really what the Biden team is trying to say here is our family is off limits. Excuse me, you sold out our country through a international criminal network that has been proven through Senate reports. Now we know federal investigations. Whether or not anything happens to the Biden crime family remains to be seen. But it is very clear. I mean, they sold access for money and they used their power for cash. The Biden team is trying to say this is a no-fly zone. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of students across the country fighting for America, go to tpusa.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Big interviews coming up soon. Talk to you soon.